Welcome to The Daily Drive. This show is dedicated to keeping you educated, informed, and most importantly, driven to succeed. We want your feedback, so call us at 1-800-437-5121. Everyone on The Daily Drive Show team hopes you enjoy this show. Here's your host, Ken Knorr.
Welcome to The Daily Drive. I am so incredibly glad that you are here today and that you've chosen to take a few minutes out of your day and listen to us on terrestrial radio WQBQ in Central Florida at 7:30 a.m. But you can always catch us on dailydriveshow.com, anywhere where great podcasts are heard. Also, you can choose to hear us and listen to us by subscribing on your Alexa smart device. Today, we're going to have the second part of an interview with David with PopSockets. 140 million pop grips have been sold to date on the backside of a phone, a great way to hold and control the device and maybe not drop it. Yesterday, if you didn't get a chance to listen to the first part of this interview, I definitely recommend that you go to dailydriveshow.com and listen to that first part of this interview. But we're going to pick up right where we left off. Here we go.
As an engineer and, you know, a background in computer science, I realized that, like, if we're making and developing a video game, let's just say a game about car racing, well, I show and render all of the information around me, but I simulate all of the information that's not in my visual range. So I'm on the track racing around the track with cars, and we know that cars are going to bump into each other, but the cars are not in my visual range. We simulate that those bumps and nicks and stuff happen, but when they come back around, I can now see that they happened, but I don't know really that they did happen. So is our reality? You can say for sure that you are real, and I could probably say to myself, I am real. We can agree on our existence, but am I real when I'm not there? In other words, when this phone call is over, am I just being rendered for the moment and then simulated when I'm away, or the vice versa in my case with you? I mean, that's a possibility. We're going deep now. I'm way off channel.
Depending how you describe them, these are all possibilities. I don't think it's a real possibility from your perspective. When you say, am I just a simulation, you'd have to say to you, because you're clearly never merely a simulation. From your perspective, you can be absolutely certain that you're as real as it gets. I think that's a confusion that some people get into, to start thinking of themselves as software or information that can be transferred from one thing to another, and they start thinking that's all I am. I'm just a bunch of, you know, I could be a bunch of ones and zeros that could be transferred here or there, and I'm just a simulation in someone else's mind. That to me is nonsense. But the other question could, do other objects that I'm representing, you know, visually or through my sensations right now, when I'm no longer directly representing them, right? If somebody walks behind me, for instance, and I don't even hear them, but I continue to believe that they exist, do they become less real? Seems extremely unlikely to me, but certainly it's possible. It's logically possible. So, I mean, when you step back and ask what's the best explanation for what's going on right now in our heads, and you ask what's the best explanation for why I have all these experiences I do, is it that there's real people in front of me when I have those experiences, but as soon as I experience somebody walking behind me, that they pop out of existence? That's a pretty bizarre world to live in. So it doesn't seem like the best explanation of our evidence, even though it's possible. It seems unlikely.
If a tree falls in the forest, does it make a sound if we're not there to hear it? It's pretty sure that it does.
Exactly. Pretty likely that it does, yes.
Do you miss this?
I don't. No, but not because it's not interesting. I guess for two reasons. One, I put a lot of time into what I took to be the most interesting problems of philosophy. And then at some point, I felt like I had made progress on the less interesting questions, but I hadn't made any progress on the most interesting questions, any progress, you know, for that I could pass along to humankind and say, hey, I finally solved this question. How are we related to our brains? And I didn't think that I was going to. I just don't think it's possible. I think these are really hard questions that are fun to grapple with, and it's satisfying to grapple with them to a certain extent. But after a certain amount of time, it's diminishing returns for oneself, I think. So it was no longer that satisfying to me. And I'm just not the sort of person to miss much. So that's why I also don't miss it. I'm in the now, just like you are. Yesterday is not real.
I like that. I like that answer at the tail end there, that no regrets. And of course, when it comes to philosophy, you don't have to be paid as a professor to still think on those issues. You don't have to be in that profession to have deep conversations about philosophical things with others. And I dragged you right into it, right? And it's just like for you, I imagine, riding a bicycle. But I find it incredibly intriguing to meet somebody who, you know, has those level or the capability for that level of deep thinking and expansive thinking. It's not every day that you meet somebody that has that skill set. I think people have all types of different skill sets. Philosophical musings, if you will, is a unique skill set.
Yeah, I don't meet a lot of philosophers in business. And I can say my fellow philosophers were not much help to me when I started my business.
So if you were to sum it up, though, and I think the word philosophy is used incredibly loosely, when we talk about what is your philosophy for you, in the sense of your philosophy of, it's not 42, your philosophy in life, what are you trying to accomplish? Where are you at now in this moment, and where are you headed?
Sure. So, I mean, that question that I raised earlier that philosophers consider, how should we act? What should we do? I take that to be the subject matter of ethics, and I take it to apply to ourselves, too. You know, every day, what should I do? Even little tiny things. Should I open this drawer? Should I repair a picture that just fell and broke? Basically, every choice I make, how should I choose? And I think that the answer is always I should do what leads to the best consequences, not just for me, not just for my family, not just for my family plus my dog, not just for my family plus my local community, but for everybody. Do I actually live like that? No. So I'm no moral saint, but in general, I'm trying to make the biggest positive impact in the world. So with business, for instance, I'm trying to build as much momentum as I can with this business so that the business can make a positive impact during the business. So we have a program called Poptivism that I could talk about at some point, but also just to generate value for the business so that I can then use that to jumpstart other businesses and nonprofits that will make a positive impact in the world.
You've got over 200 employees. I'll share my, you know, the simple philosophy, and that is you and I think we're very congruent in the sense that the way you win is by having the most impact on individuals, however that is, whether that's a one-on-one impact that I am able to, you know, one-on-one, and maybe that's the scale of my ability to do that, or as a human being within my society, I have a positive impact on another individual. And the one that wins is the one that has the most impact on individuals. We change or better their existence or life. You obviously, this has given you the ability to employ 200 plus people. That plays into it, I imagine.
Yeah, so you just further defined when I said the goal is to make the biggest positive impact, to have the greatest consequences, not just for me, but for everyone. You kind of fleshed that out by saying, you know, the best consequences are the ones that make a positive difference to something like the greatest number of individuals' lives. That's where the difference happens, is at an individual level. Which I agree, and I think the individuals also include individual dogs and cats and cows and all the conscious beings of having experience.
Tell us about Poptivism. I see that. That's, and by the way, just from a of visual access, front and center on the website, right at the top, right in the middle.
Yep, which has been a little controversial. Some people look at that and they think, huh, that's kind of misguided. I mean, after all, you make these grips. Why is Poptivism front and center? So Poptivism evolved out of our do-goods program and our do-goods department, which I created a couple years ago. Geez, maybe now it's been more than that. But we all, everybody in the company wanted to make a positive impact, and we were all just so busy trying to keep up with the growth that none of us felt like we had time to really devote the resources. So I hired somebody as the director of do-goods and told her that's her full-time job, is to make sure that we're doing good. So she started off with some partnerships with organizations that support people with mobility disorders. So we ended up partnering each quarter with one of these organizations, starting with, actually, I can't remember which one we started with, but we ended up working with three or four Parkinson's organizations. Then we worked with the Arthritis Foundation. We worked with ALS Foundation. We worked with Craig Hospital, a hospital that helps people with spinal and brain injuries in Colorado. So we would raise money for each of these organizations, and then we'd get 10,000 grips into the hands of people that the organization support, because our grips, we were learning, really help people use their devices if they have trouble, holding their phone due to Parkinson's or due to a spinal injury or due to severe arthritis. They can now hold their phone better, and then they can communicate with their families and live a better life. So we'd get 10,000 grips into the hands of those people and raise money. I think 10% of our sales on our website each quarter we would give to one of those groups. And after that experiment, for say a year and a half, we decided we could make a much bigger impact by opening this up to all organizations. And instead of dictating where the money goes, we would let our community decide where to make the impact. So this is Poptivism. Poptivism allows you or anybody in the world to design their own grip on our website, and then tag any 501c3, so any registered charity here in the U.S., and 50% of the sale of that grip will go to that charity. So we've worked with a bunch of influencers. We continue to have programs with celebrities and influencers. And then we work with a lot of, just individuals, kids especially. So we're interested in sort of energizing the Gen Z generation who has a reputation for wanting to make a positive impact, but many of which aren't of the age. Some of them are, but they're not of the age where they're in a position to really make a concrete positive impact other than talk about things on social media. We give them this tool where they can actually start raising money for a charity of their choice.
I believe, anyway, what we're talking about there, when we talk about having a positive impact, you're not only having a positive impact on the outcome of when you're raising money for that charitable organization, but you're having a positive impact on a person, enabling them a way to do that, giving them a vehicle. And you're going down and maybe even inspiring younger kids to do the same thing. I mean, that's big.
And we intend to put more resources into helping kids especially learn how to run it as a business, so become entrepreneurs, really. So teach them about marketing, teach them how to find an artist to help create their design, teach them about choosing the right cause even. I personally don't think all causes are created equal. So I don't think my local golf course, a donation there is just as good as a donation to cure cancer. Helping these kids to gain these skills and becoming entrepreneurs and making a positive impact.
Excluding yours, what company or business do you admire the most?
Oh, that's a tough question, because I'm so disconnected from reality. As a philosopher, you can imagine I was completely disconnected from pop culture and brands. It's funny. Somebody once asked me what my favorite pop socket was. I think someone asked me. Oh, a kid asked me that when I was with 20 or 30 kids who were at an entrepreneurship retreat. And I thought to myself, my favorite one, I was like, I don't even like mobile accessories. I wouldn't have a phone if I didn't have to.
it doesn't have to be, you know, some well-known organization. It could be a vendor who you work with, and it's unknown to anybody, but it's something that you have a personal knowledge of and say, I admire that company and what they do or how they behave or how they treat the world, whatever it is. It doesn't have to be, you know, oh, we have to name some big, you know, company like Apple or something like that. I mean, you know, so other than your own, do you admire another organization out there?
Well, I could mention, yeah, I could give three or four, if I can, quick examples, and each one I admire for different reasons. Apple I admire for their design. I mean, it's just beautiful, their standards, what they've done. What Steve Jobs did is impressive. On the other hand, I can't think of a single thing that Steve Jobs personally did to really help improve people's lives. Of course, he would say, I'm improving their lives with technology. But, you know, you take him, and he criticized Bill Gates. Bill Gates for not having a creative bone in his body, I think he once said of Bill Gates, which to me was just brutal, given that Bill Gates and his wife, Melinda, have probably done more good for this world than any other two individuals in history. They have done so much good for this world with their foundation around the world. So you've got Microsoft, who's, you know, traditionally their branding and their product I don't admire as much as Apple's, but the impact that they've made through the wealth generated by to certain individuals has been amazing. So I admire it for that. And then you've got a company like Patagonia, whose values are clearly built right into the company, you know, their support for the environment while they're making quality products. So you might think they kind of blend the two together. They've got the beautiful design, and they've got the values that are right out front, so you know when you're buying their product what you're supporting. And finally, number four, there's something called the Good Food Institute. It's a nonprofit that's bringing together organizations around the world that are trying to stop factory farming through capitalism, through for-profit, a lot of it. So their companies like Impossible Burger, Beyond Meat, a bunch of other companies that are making vegetarian alternatives to meat on the one hand, and then there's quite a few companies that are making cell-based alternatives to factory farm meat. So it's not genetically engineered, but they're starting with stem cells, and they're growing meat on their own without the conscious being. They just take a cell from an actual animal, grow it, and they're making burgers out of it, and they're making fish, and they're going to make chicken, and eventually we'll have all of these meats without any suffering and with a fraction of the environmental impact that factory farming causes.
If you could travel back in time to the very first day that you started and talk to yourself for 15 minutes, what would you tell yourself?
I would probably be extremely quiet and not say a word in hopes that I didn't alter the course of my life, because it's gone pretty darn well.
Right.
With any little sound, even a little whisper, I could accidentally alter the course of my life in a way that would have ended up in tragedy. But
super happy where you are. But I guess the question, the real question is, if you could, you know, you've gone through this and you maybe had worries, or you maybe I should have done this differently, or, you know, I should have done that. Lessons you've learned, and what lesson would you want to, you know, I know we all need to learn our lessons, quite candidly. I think there's a quote on that too that says the expert, and this is an old quote, like from 1300s, the expert in any field is the man who has made all the mistakes there are to be made in a given vertical field. Probably paraphrasing that terribly, but you know the point. So you have to learn from your mistakes.
Sure.
And I guess the question I'm asking is, what would you tell yourself not to do?
I would tell myself not to get stuck in the, you know, not to confuse the trees and the forest, to be able to step out of the trees and see the whole forest, and to take the time to get advice from experts. So I was so busy. I mean, I was ridiculously busy. I was just barely keeping my head above water, trying to run all the different parts of the company as it was growing, that I never felt that I had 30 seconds to develop a relationship with somebody who had expertise in any of these matters, because the concern was that the company would fail if I took those 30 seconds away to try to develop that. So I never went to startup groups in Boulder. I never, Yeah, I just never developed relationships with the business community here at all. And I had none to start with since I came from the academic community. It really hurt me. I made so many mistakes that I wouldn't have made, for instance, with manufacturing, had I surrounded myself with experts. That's what I would do differently.
Are you surrounded with experts now?
Yes. Oh, it's so much different. I mean, I myself have learned so much, so it's easier for me. But in addition, you know, at some point the company started generating enough revenue to allow me to hire people with expertise versus just hiring, people who had just graduated from college or people who had never graduated from college, which is how we began for the first year or so.
If you were conducting this interview, what question would you ask you?
I guess I'd probably ask why I'm talking to myself.
All right.
And whether whether I should see a doctor.
We found the humor part. We knew there was
right.
a resident goofball, is what it says on your website. What little nugget of advice would you give somebody?
Maybe I'd say two things. One, the fact that many entrepreneurs, including myself, who had no prior experience, have been successful, that I think addresses the question that you might ask of yourself, can I do this if I've never been an entrepreneur before? The answer is sure. Experience is not necessary to be an entrepreneur. And then there's another question then, which is what is necessary then if not experience? Experience helps, right? I'm not saying it doesn't, but it's not essential. What is essential? Just certain characteristics. You've got to be a hard worker, an extremely hard worker. You've got to be a problem solver. You have to have confidence in yourself that you can solve new problems and not, you know, when you face a new problem, you can't give up, of course, which is the third thing. You've got to be resilient. But you've got to have the confidence that, I don't know the answer to this question, and I'm not going to know the answer to a million other questions, but I know how to figure out the answers to questions, and that's what I'm going to do. And then be resilient. So whether you can train yourself to be resilient or not, I'm not sure, but those who are not resilient shouldn't go into the field because you're going to fail again and again and again, and you can't let that stop you in your tracks. On the other hand, if you're too confident, then you'll keep on going in the face of failure, and you'll end up, you know, losing everything, and 20 years later, you know, have nothing because failure after failure, you weren't listening to the failures, the reasons you were failing, and you didn't change course, and that would be rather bad too. I've met some of these people too, who are, you know, passionate and competent, but they're just not listening to the world when the world tells them this product just isn't something people need. People sometimes ask me, they're like, how come you're selling so many and I've only sold 5 of these in 6 years or something? And I say, I don't mean to insult you, but it's not you, it's the product. Like, by now you need to listen. People don't think they need that product.
It is a satisfying experience to create something and have a market response that is positive and says, I want that. Whatever that is, an incredibly gratifying experience. And you have to learn, I agree with you. Being in the internet marketing side, I get lots of people that come to me and go, help me market this. And I look at stuff and I go, I can't find a market for that.
Right.
Good. People aren't wanting it. It is a misnomer. I actually just said this in my last interview with a different CEO. It's a misnomer. It's a myth to say, if you build it, they will come. That's just not true. You can build things, lots of things that people don't want. It was absolutely fantastic getting the opportunity to chat with you.
I enjoyed it a lot, too. Thanks for letting me talk about philosophy.
I thought, you know, well, it's our show. We go digging into you. But it's rare, I think, at least when I was doing my reading, to find anything that's deeper than, what's the story of pop sockets and let's follow that. And we got that in here, too. But more importantly, what's the story of David and who is David and will David be real when I hang up the phone? And he will. I'm pretty sure I figured that out today.
From his perspective, he will.
For mine, yeah. Now, too. You convinced me. You're going to continue to operate. No, thank you so much for taking time to be on the show. That was an incredibly interesting interview.
with David from PopSockets. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did, and I hope that you tune in again tomorrow on the Daily Drive. Have a fantastic, amazing day of your life. Talk to you then. Thanks for listening, and thanks to our sponsor, That Company.
Why is That Company the white label digital marketing provider for some of the biggest agencies in the industry? Because we get results, we retain clients, and we deliver profitability. Visit www.thatcompany.com to find out how we can make your agency more profitable.
If you want to give us feedback, call us now at 1-800-437-5121 or drop by dailydriveshow.com. Make sure you add us to your Alexa daily briefing skill. Don't forget that you can listen to us live every day on WQBQ at 7:30 a.m. The show wouldn't be possible without the Daily Drive Show team, executive producer Rob the Hitchhiker Young, web guru Taj Royer, and the audio man with the plan, Shoddy. Don't forget to tune in tomorrow.